Welcome to the Sean Chandler Podcast, a place to talk movies and nerd culture way too much. Joining me today as our special guest is, once again, Austin Burke. Hey, Austin, anything interesting happened in the world since you were last on back in February?
We were talking about this before. It does not feel like February. I feel like this has been the strangest just sequence of events since right. We've last met. And it is crazy how much our plans have changed, how much our channels have changed. But you know what, Sean? I'm happy to be here, man. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, I'm glad you were able to make it on. And speaking of big, gigantic, massive events, did anything interesting happen to you this morning?
Yeah. I may have gotten a little email saying I'm now a critic on Rotten Tomatoes, which is pretty sweet. I could not believe it. I thought it was fake at first. My wife, we were standing there looking at it, just like clicking stuff like, okay, is this good? And then I went and made sure. But man, I am so thankful. Not gonna lie, I had a little bit of tears going on right here. You work really hard, and Sean, you know, and Griffin, you know, it's the grind. Yeah. It's all about the grind. And then once you finally get there, it feels good, man. But I'm thankful to everyone who's allowed this to happen to me and my wife for all of her support, man. It's pretty cool.
And congratulations on that. I know if you just stop and think about this, for all of you that are listening, all of you that are watching, you know, we started doing this as just fans like you. All three of us were just people that were watching other YouTubers, reading Rotten Tomatoes on Collider.com. We were just like you. And so then as kind of these things have happened, whether getting a Rotten Tomatoes with Griffin, all these amazing interviews that he gets to do that, you know, sometimes we have to delay the podcast because he just talked to someone that we've been watching, like Jason Isaacs. We've been talking to this guy that's watching movies since Armageddon 22 cool. years ago. Mind-blowing to us, as you would think. Like, if that were to happen to you, we're still like, wow, this just happened. And this was one of those amazing days for Austin to where this morning he realized he's going to be a part of that website that, you know, he's probably been reading for 15 years now. And that's just really cool that the way it worked out that happened this morning so that, you know, we get to share that moment with you and kind of talk about it a little bit with my audience. Hey, Griffin.
Yeah. How's it going? Not much, you know, same old. Yeah, I have nothing new to bring to the table other than I'm alive. So
very cool. That's awesome to be alive.
Congrats. Honestly, that's the biggest thing that you could be doing right now. Yeah, for sure. You, what was I going to say? I missed it. Oh no, I was saying, so before you started, I love how every single time before you start one of these, you're always like, well, let me go yell at my kids real quick.
Yes,
it's just
yes.
Like you run away and you're just like, hey, everyone shut the heck up. I'm going to go
record. No, right before the stream button, yeah. I have to wait. Like, you know, I've got three kids. So one of them's a baby. She's going to scream no matter what. And the other two are trying to entertain the baby or drive each other crazy. So they're just running around screaming. And so right before I click the stream button for the podcast, I open the door like, be quiet, everyone.
Turn it's great.
And go crazy. Yeah. And
I mean, he literally, I know it's like, he's perfectly calm and collected right now, but beforehand he literally says, excuse me for a moment. I'm going to go yell at my kids. And so it's just
so
it's
calm.
Just
nice, and then blew up and I'm like, oh my God, great. Sean. Yeah.
It's great. It's great. I love it.
Out of context, I am upstairs and I was screaming down the stairwell across the entire house. It wasn't just that I'm a rage monster, which I am. I also just had to be loud enough that I could scream over their screaming so that hopefully too much of that in the background. And then we started the stream and I had the feed playing in one of my other tabs on my computer speakers at the beginning of this. So I was about to pause, be like, Austin, could you please turn down your audio? And I was like, wait, I'm the idiot that has audio playing right now.
That's funny.
Sean Chandler, the guy with many, many faults. If you're listening to the audio version of this, wherever you listen to podcasts, be sure to leave a rating, leave a review. It helps the podcast rank a little bit better so more people can discover it, more people can join in on the conversations. And if you are in the chat right now, if you send any super chats, we will respond to them. We will be reading it to kind of get your feedback on all of the events kind of going on in the world, all the subjects that we are covering. We did even have a super chat come in from Shashank. I'm sorry. I do not know how to pronounce your name. It says, God bless you, Austin. Congrats. Very much appreciate for the super chat. And once again, I would totally agree. Congratulations, Austin. That is a huge accomplishment, making it on the run. And it leads to all sorts of headaches, as we were discussing before the live stream started. The Rotten Tomatoes website is actually really old, outdated. And as soon as you're on there, you realize these probably aren't people running some deep conspiracy, because they can't even have an outdated website. They're just getting money like crazy from Disney and Warner Brothers or whatever, whoever is supposedly paying the money. They are certainly not investing that money into the actual infrastructure of the website, because it is clunky as can be. Probably there's some faults in this conspiracy theory. With that said, we're going to dive in. We had a bunch of different stuff to cover, obviously, because last week was both Comic-Con at home. It was Justice Con, Zack Snyder's little secret independent comic con for his Snyder Cut. And then also ton of delays, Emmy nominations dropped. And then we've got Austin Burke on here, the king of Netflix original content. So we want to talk a little bit about that. And as throughout the month of July, we've kind of been talking about the best of the year thus far. So there you have it. Be sure to join in the chat. Let us know what you're thinking about stuff. But from my perspective, first piece that we're going to talk about today is the Justice Con and the big things that we learned about what was some little teases of what's going on with the Zack Snyder cut. And he did show us just a 17 little clip that expanded on a little single shot that was in the trailers that we saw. And we did get to see black suit Superman in these trailers. It's just a tease. He's smiley Superman. He's not brooding Superman. And throughout the course of the interview that Zack Snyder gave, he talked about what footage he will be using, confirmed kind of the length, the runtime, that it's actually longer than we even thought it was. So before we dive into the specifics of all of that, what do you guys, Austin, what do you think about Black Suit Superman? Just even getting that little tease.
Yeah, it's cool. It really is. It's something I never expected to see from this universe after we got Justice League, because I said, well, that's done. We're never going to see it. But it's nice to know that Zack Snyder is finally getting his version out there. Now, whether it is that comic accurate version that everyone, I think, wants to see, we'll have to find out. But hey, according to the visuals, he's wearing the black suit. That's comic book accurate enough as of now. And I think he looks pretty cool. And it's nice to see that smile. So we'll have to see how that plays out in the movie as well.
That's the thing that I really liked, is that we get the clip that gives you the black suit, but the fear was black suit Superman, he's brooding, he's the villain, he's really the main antagonist. And I'm sure there might be some of that in here, but that he feels kind of like what we saw at the end of Justice League, of a little bit more comic book accurate, the smiley Superman, while at the same time being in that black suit. I appreciate that we had a little bit of both of those in there. Griffin, what did you think about the little tease of black suit Superman?
It was awesome. It was cool to see that. I think of all the things he could have revealed at Justice Con for these fans who have, like, you know, been championing the film, supporting it, trying to get his vision realized. It's like a great first tease for them, because like, look, you drop this clip, and I even think he said it on the stream, but like, it's like you drop this clip at like, you know, to the masses and what like not at an event geared towards just like people other than Snyder Cut fans, and everyone's like, oh yeah, this is cool, that, you know, it's sure, okay, he's in a black suit, that doesn't really get me excited, but whatever. But if you drop it you know, at an event that is geared towards these hardcore Snyder Cut fans who, like, they wanted to see this. They wanted to see Henry Cavill without a CGI mustache. You know, they wanted to see, like, Superman meet Alfred and all that stuff like that. That's enough to get to get a lot of those fans excited.
Exactly. And I think that's kind of the thing that makes this clip so perfect. It kind of touches on a couple of different things. One of them is Black Suit Superman, which, you know, I saw this, some conversations on Twitter, like, what's the big deal about Black Suit Superman? Cool, he's in a different color suit, who cares? Or like, you know, I don't like the aesthetic of it. Like, okay, I got you. Okay, like, but it's for people that understand the death of Superman, the reign of the Superman storylines, that it's this, what the suit is, it's this restoration suit, and that they're like paying attention to that. It just has these deep comic book ties that obviously comic book movie fans really appreciate. It's something that if you're going to do the death and resurrection of Superman and you don't have black suit, it's weird. And that's why it was weird that we didn't get it before. So seeing it says like, okay, this is more of that epic that has more ties back to the source materials. That's one part of what makes it really cool. But then the other one is that we saw that tease in like one of the teases that they put in the trailer that was supposed to hook you and make you really excited is that there's this moment where Alfred's sitting there and then you see they do the Jurassic Park wiggling cup effect.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't show you what happened there. And you're supposed to see, oh, Superman shows up to meet Alfred. They put that at the end of the trailer as a tease of something that would happen.
Yeah.
And, then it's not in the movie. And so it's even it's like one of these shots that makes you go, oh, okay. Like I see kind of what we're doing here. And in the interview with him, I don't know if this is the way that Zack Snyder always talks. He could be a little bit scattershot in how he addressed some things. And you can tell he was speaking to the release, the Snyder Cut fans. And so he was trying to say stuff without fully burning bridges. But he said some stuff like, when they were working on it, they would take some of my footage and they would put it in there without asking for my permission. But he wouldn't give the full context of that. But it felt a lot like I think he was referring to the trailer because he was teasing this clip. And so like they put in clips that it seems like they didn't even intend to put in the movie into the trailers because they knew it would get people excited, which once again just goes back to the frustrations of everything that they were doing during that point in time. Just had a super chat come in here, and this will tie into the conversation about
I've seen this
about the interview. Yeah. Oh. So it says, Ayesh asks, I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name. Hey, Sean, do you think there will be a Green Lantern cameo? And if there is, who do you think should play Hal Jordan? I think Armie Hammer is a good choice. So the reason that this is a great connection to what was going on, Zack Snyder was asked about this during the panel. They said, hey, can you tell us anything about Green Lantern? And during all of this, he answered questions about what footage he would use, about the runtime. He threw WB executives under the bus. And then they went, hey, can you tell us about the Green Lantern cameo or any plans for Green Lantern in this? Zipped his lips. Mm. He didn't say anything. So I would take that to mean that we're probably going to get something interesting. Who should play him? I wouldn't anticipate any sort of A-lister. I wouldn't anticipate like Hal Jordan shows up and it's Ryan Reynolds. I'm not expecting it to be Armie Hammer. I'm expecting footage of the Green Lantern Corps is what I would think. That would be my guess, but he was asked about this during the panel. Zip. Yep. Didn't say anything. Griffin, did you have something to expand on this one?
Yeah, no, this is definitely a rumor that I think I've seen floating around for a little bit. And I think part of it is true. I agree with you. I believe that we will see like the Green Lantern Corps in some capacity. I mean, we already saw other lanterns in that flashback where like Wonder Woman is telling the story of like Steppenwolf and stuff like that. So I wouldn't be surprised if we saw other lanterns and maybe there's like a tease of Hal Jordan, but I don't think you're going to actually see Hal Jordan team up with the Justice League in this movie, Green Lantern, all that stuff. There's no way. And then there's like the rumors that like, oh, Ryan Reynolds, Green Lantern is coming back. Yeah. That's absurd. That is not happening. Why would they bring back the person or the portrayal of Green Lantern that has been made fun of ad nauseum on the internet and in movies, in the Deadpool movies? Like, why would they do that? The movie was a colossal disappointment. It was a colossal flop. I don't even think maybe Ryan Reynolds would come back if it was like a joke thing, but I tonally, that doesn't even make sense for a Zack Snyder film. So just don't even consider that. That's never going to happen.
Griffin, so you're a big fan of GoldenEye and Casino Royale.
Yeah.
It must have been deeply disappointing when he was hired to direct a Green Lantern movie and then it turns out to be what it was.
It was bad.
Martin, he's such a great director. And then it's like the movie gives us is so disappointing. But I think that's the thing, is that the movie is it's the butt end of a lot of jokes, even for Ryan Reynolds. Movie makes himself the butt end of the joke.
They would never do that. Yeah.
For them to be like, hey, let's loop that into our universe. directly. Let's make that now ushered in as a Comic-Con DCEU movie. It wouldn't make any sense. Austin, what do you think on Green Lantern? Have you heard about this?
Well, Reynolds Green Lantern is a meme. I mean, just the other day he was tweeting with Hugh Jackman, and Jackman said, you're looking a little green, Ryan. And I'm just I mean, at this point, if he were to come back, I don't think people would take the movie seriously after that, because everyone would just say, hey, it's Deadpool back as the thing he's been making fun of for how many years now. So I don't see that happening. If you're asking a dream casting, I'd love to see Idris Elba as Jon Stewart, but I don't think that's going to happen either. I'm with you, Sean. I think it's going to be a smaller actor, maybe even a no-name actor, kind of taking over the mantle for this movie. And either way, I'm excited, because Green Lantern is a really good character. Just the movie wasn't.
Yeah, and like the off chance is they use this edition of Hal Jordan, whatever, John Stewart, as a tease for a movie that they actually greenlight. There's always the chance of something like that. But that's not like, you don't bank on that. You're not like, oh, they'll bring Ryan Reynolds, or I think they're going to, you don't bank on that. There's like always the off chance that they do something really cool, that you we're in this alternate scenario where we get a second version of the movie. And therefore, based off where they are at now in developing other things, you can do something you wouldn't do before. But odds that are happening really low. Had another super chat come in that tackles a bunch of other stuff that came out of this, Justice Con. So Tom Guevier, very sorry if I mispronounced your name. Your thoughts on Snyder saying he'd burn Justice League if his if it's not his footage, and Ray willing to be sued over Joss Whedon. So essentially, if you don't know what he's referring to, there's kind of two different subjects there. First one is, during this interview, he was asked, would he use any of Joss Whedon's footage? And he is quoted as saying, I would set the movie on fire before he would use a single frame that he didn't shoot. Like, he said that, like, overt, I will not use any footage that I did not film. Which, throughout the rest of the interview, he also referred to what they release as a Frankenstein monster. During when he was talking about the black suit situation, he said, they didn't want to do the black suit. Like, executives said that they didn't want, they thought it wouldn't match the tone that they wanted. And they really wanted it to make it like this big, funny, jokey movie, which I'm like, we're talking about a dead Superman and the world in despair, and you want to make it a really funny, jokey movie. Like, I don't, like, we had two different visions. So he made a bunch of these statements that were just bold, like, wow, like, he is talking about WB in ways that I'm pretty shocked that he's allowed to do. What do you make of that, Austin?
Well, what this tells me is my worry at the beginning was that this was going to be the same movie, but longer, right? What this tells me is, even though obviously a lot of what he shot was in the original film, there's also a lot that we never saw, and maybe we saw in that first trailer. So this tells me that we may actually be getting a different movie with different events. And Cyborg, somewhat the lead of the original, but Cyborg really being the focus. And he said that later on. He's like, listen, I don't want to show Ray, because if I show Ray, he is the guy, right? He's the one I have to impress, because this is essentially his film. And I don't know if that was as evident to me in Joss Whedon's version. So this tells me that he does have his own movie, and maybe, we don't know, but maybe it could be significantly better than the other if it is that different. So that kind of gets me excited.
Yeah. I was just going to say, well, in terms of like what Zach said, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with it personally, because I mean, what, you know, also taking into account the way Zack Snyder speaks, he's very hyperbolic. He's very blunt about it. And obviously he's going to say stuff that plays into the fan base of Justice Con, and they're all thinking this. And so he's just like, well, all right, I'll throw it out there. It's not his movie. And I don't know why he would use any previously shot footage that wasn't his. Like, the whole notion of this is that he's putting together his version of this film. There are going to be reshoots. I do have information on that. There are going to be reshoots. Hopefully they'll get the cast back together. I know that Ben Affleck there is supposedly just coming in to do work for that. And so I can assume the rest of the team will, not just ADR, but reshoots as well. And if you look at, pictures of him recently, he's getting back into shape. He's got more gray in his beard. And so it like kind of makes sense. So, so of course, like why? Yeah.
In the interview on JusticeCon, that was another thing where he seemed to quiet up a little bit. Like, hey, are they going to be in a reshoots? I can't comment on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, he just threw executives under the bus. Well, I can't comment on that.
Yeah.
Which every time he did that, I went, that's a yes.
Yeah.
There's something to this.
Yeah. Go ahead.
But I mean, it's one of those ones that like, you know, if you ask him something ridiculous, that's not going to happen. It's easy to say no. So if you're just not supposed to confirm something, that's where you're like, I can't comment on that.
Yeah. But
you comment on everything else.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's dropping stuff left and right on Vero. So it's like, if it's, I feel like whatever Zach, you're right. Whatever Zack Snyder like quiets up and he's like, well, I can't really talk about that until like, I don't know, DC fandom or something like that. It's most likely going to happen. And I think when we get to fandom, they'll drop the trailer. They'll bring Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He did say they would drop the trailer, but they'll bring the cast back out maybe, or have them online or whatever. And it'll be this big thing. So people like, you know, who've been saying, oh, Batfleck's going to return. He is, but for reshoots on this film, we don't know, you know, past that, if he's going to come back.
So, and to kind of tie all this together before we kind of move on to our next subject of the day, to take one more thing that he said in there, he said that two more things. He said at fandom, we'll know if it's a movie or if it's like a 6-episode miniseries. Mm-hmm. He said he doesn't know yet. He doesn't really care. He's kind of interested in both, but he will announce it at fandom when there will be a tease. He did say that. Other final thing in here, he'd already said this to Grace Randolph, but he confirmed the current runtime is over 214 minutes. That he confirmed that. But put these two pieces of information together. Put them together. No Whedon footage. That movie's only 2 hours, and you cut out all the Whedon footage. You can watch it and be like, that was Whedon, that was Whedon, that was Whedon. You cut all of that out. So then even at that point in time, let's say it's 45 minutes of Whedon footage in there. So that's hour and 14 minutes. You've got at least like two more hours of Zack Snyder Justice League based off these comments that all sound real, all sound legit, and they're doing more footage. So, I mean, that's a dramatically different movie. Just at face value, if he used Joss Whedon footage and just added to it, you're already getting over an hour more footage, like a lot more footage. But we're already cutting back then also all the Whedon footage. So this is going to be a wildly different beast with a different tone. And I love the fact that something like this exists. I always love these types of things when they happen. When you have two different directors, different visions, different kind of executives telling them what to do. And you get to see the same synopsis told two very different ways. That's cool to me.
Yeah.
So we had a super chat come in from Mike Media Inc. He says, is anyone sad to see Johnny Depp leave Pirates? I am. By the time this movie comes out, it'll have been 20 years since the original. So I'm not. He got a lot of movies. At 20 years, it's time to move on. So I really don't feel sad. And it sounds like they're going to be loosely tied. So I don't think he's totally done. If his marriage trouble, legal trouble, whatever that bad PR surrounding his marriage, that gets resolved, I'm sure he'll show up to be like, hey, another burr, and tip his hat or something like that, pass the baton. You know, I don't want another one starring him.
Yeah. So. I mean, that's the thing. It's like the movies, as they progressively went on, he became more and more of a caricature, and he became more and more of like a main character in the story. And it's like, you guys miss what was so great about Jack Sparrow in that first Pirates. He was like the seasoning. He was the spice that you put into an already really great story. And he didn't overdo it. Like Johnny Depp was nominated for an Oscar for that role And if you watch that first Pirates, like, it makes sense. He transforms, but he's not a cartoon. So, yeah, I'm kind of in the same camp as you, Sean.
That's what I was going to say, too, is I'm more sad with what they did with the character as they
progressed. Yeah. Right.
I loved, I mean, I'm a mess. I've dressed up as Jack Sparrow multiple times for Halloween. Like, I was obsessed. But the more movies that come out, the more I'm just like, I honestly don't really want to see any more Pirates, but if they're going to do anything, it makes the most sense with what they're doing and just kind of rebooting it. So I'm okay with it.
No. I'm sorry, I missed this in the Tom's question, coming about Ray Fisher's comments. I don't really like to go in too much into accusations of kind of behind the scenes stuff. Kind of what I've said before and what I said on Twitter a little bit is that you have to put all of it into context. Joss Whedon had a terrible job to do, which is to say they filmed a movie they seemed to really like, and he was hired to come in and redo their movie with a different tone. So they're frustrated they're coming back, and he's kind of inherently the conflict with them. And so people who are stressed do bad things, do mean things, and they become less patient. People who are stressed because they're being brought back interpret things poorly. I say that only as context. I do not know what happened. I do not have specifics from him. There have been additional kind of things that have come out. So I don't really like to narrow down like, my definitely back. I definitely think this until there's something more definitive. And if Joss Whedon is actually abusive, he's been working in Hollywood a long time. There'll be evidence of that. And more stories will kind of come out.
Yeah.
And, truth will come to light. And if that's the case, then I don't want him working because he's an abusive person. If it's just one bad experience on one film that was obviously a nightmare, I interpret that very differently. Cause it's like this one guy out of the blue is like, hey, this guy's terrible. And you go, there've been little murmurs and some things that he maybe isn't as pure of a person as we thought. This seems to be kind of now he's mean and abusive on set. And then more things are trickling out. Spike from Buffy has said he grabbed my throat and slammed me against the wall because I was getting too popular. Seems like more things are coming out.
Yeah.
And so, and I was on the Michael Rosenbaum podcast. And this is like, okay, it seems like we're probably going to hear more stuff. But until we kind of have more confirmation, I wouldn't fully jump to conclusions, but I would be aware that there's a lot of this stuff out there. Austin, did you have much to chime in? I don't want to spend too much time on this.
No, I'm with you. I usually like to stay out until we know all of the details, right? Eventually, we'll probably get more information. Until then, I'm just like, yeah, we'll just see.
Griffin, anything you want to chime in on that one?
No, not too much else. I mean, like you said, there kind of have been like little, you know, hints that this is sort of a pattern for him throughout the years. And I think, you know, speaking to friends who are avid followers and fans of Whedon's work dating back to his time in television, they've basically said, well, yeah, it's sort of like a pill we've had to swallow because the writing's sort of been on the wall throughout the years. So I think it was really only a matter of time before all this stuff started to come out. And now, you know, with someone like Ray Fisher, who's obviously, I mean, you see interviews when he's looking at like Jason Momoa and Ben Affleck about like Joss Whedon taking over. And he's like, they look at him and he's like, well, we're just, you know, we're not going to talk about that. So it's like everything is there. And I, just like you said, whenever it comes out, that'll be when, you know, we kind of talk about it. So,
okay, we're going to jump on Comic-Con in just a second, but a couple of super chats come in. So I'm going to hit these real quick and then we'll start talking about what did everybody think about Comic-Con. Let us know down below in the chat. Was it awesome or was it awful? Did it provide a way for more people to join in or was it a total bust? Let us know down below in the comments. I just ask, but if you see DC's track record, they hire pretty well-known actors for famous actors like Ben Affleck, Henry Cavill, Jason Momoa, Zachary Levi, J.K. Simmons. Well, I mean, Henry Cavill is famous because he was Superman. He wasn't famous when he was hired. Ben Affleck was an A-lister. So those are two opposite examples of what they do. I don't think that this you can say DC does this. Gal Gadot, she was a side character in a couple Fast and Furious movies. Jason Momoa is like a fanboy favorite, but he was on one season of Game of Thrones and Stargate or something like that. Like, he is an A-lister because of the DCEU. It's not like, you know, Zachary Levi was on a TV show that did moderately well, but they're all fandom people, people that had fandom credit, except Henry Cavill, who really had no credibility. He was well known. People knew he was really good, but he didn't have credit. So I wouldn't sit like it is not. You can't look in 2020 and say, hey, look, these are all A-listers. Right. They're A-listers because they're in the DCEU now and have been for a number of years. I think I had one more super chat, and then we'll jump on this one. Hey, guys, have any of you seen Train to Busan? If you haven't, it's awesome. The sequel comes out next month. If you have thoughts on the film, I have not seen it. It's from SPC Birds, 317-1993. Have either one of you seen it?
I love the first. It's so much fun. One of the coolest. And I didn't see it until recently, right? I had to catch it. I had only seen parts of it, but it is
on Netflix.
Good. It's on Netflix. And I think for a while it was on Prime as well as Netflix at the same time. So it's a great movie. I recommend it to anyone who loves zombie films, you know?
Yeah.
It's on my mind, especially with a new one coming out. I definitely want to check it out for that reason. And I've got a little bit of time, and it's not a big franchise. So it's entirely possible that I will. I just don't know, because I'm working on this big, massive project behind the scenes on this stuff that's YouTube related, but not posted on my main channel stuff. So I don't know if I'll be able to check it out, but everything I've heard is that it's like a really good, interesting comic book movie. All right, moving along to Comic-Con at home. So last week, which normally would have been San Diego Comic-Con, basically the biggest week when it comes to comic news, movie news. As a movie YouTuber, I'm just normally all hands on deck for Comic-Con to just do reactions to all the big announcements. I'll sit on Twitter tweeting along with panels. Yeah. Last week we had Comic-Con at home, and the response from Variety was,
I love that article.
Why was Comic-Con at home a bust? And I think at the core of it is that they simply did not get any good panels for broad appeal, mass appeal with bombshell announcements. Even the ones that had the potential to do something would be like, oh, turned out to be like, okay.
Yeah.
There wasn't any, like, no, nothing that was actually at Comic-Con won Comic-Con. Like, we can still think back 7 years ago when they did a Comic-Con panel and they had, it was a Harry Lennox walkout, and he reads this quote from The Dark Knight Returns, and then they drop a logo, boom, our follow-up to Man of Steel is Batman and Superman. Yeah. And even with the movie disappointing a lot of people, that's an iconic Comic-Con moment where it's like, does not matter at all what Marvel announces, boom, DC won Comic-Con. And you can think of like these iconic moments. And this year, what it was like, you know, guys, New Mutants is going to give away access to a press screening. What? That's your thing. And then it's like, let's drop a trailer. And we're like, it's dropping at the end of August. We promise. Get the joke. These are not like big wins. It's like, we've got a trailer for Bill and Ted, even though we dropped the trailer for Bill and Ted 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
What was supposed to be the big winner here? I'll say this. I didn't watch any comic panels. Like, I kind of like looked into them a little bit. And I was like, maybe I should. And then I was like, oh, I'm late to this. Let me check Twitter. Is anyone tweeting about these panels? No one was. As soon as Zack Snyder's Justice Con panel started, Twitter blew up. I was on that one. He was dropping bombs. I was tweeting about it. Not one panel from actual Comic-Con did that.
No.
Not one. And it, like I said, it was both. There was, they like went for bulk. It's like, let's have a bazillion panels so you can't even find what you might be interested in. They're all just people sitting in their room streaming, doing this. And then even the ones that were big ones, no bombshells, not one. Austin, did you watch any of the panels? And was there anything that you would say was the winner of Comic-Con?
No. For me, the winner were all of the rumors surrounding Comic-Con before. It's like, Keanu's going to be there. Is he going to be announced as Constantine? What's going on? And then every panel happens and it's just crickets all the way through Comic-Con. Yeah. Crickets. And the beauty of what Comic-Con used to be, and I see why they've kind of pulled out. It used to be Marvel versus DC. Who's going to have the bigger announcements? What's going to be the biggest thing? Loki coming out on stage. I mean, just the coolest things ever. Right. And then over the last couple of years, I mean, even last year, wasn't the Mahershala Ali's Blade announcement? Wasn't that Comic-Con? Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. So this is the first year.
That was thought to be a little bit of like a, okay, you know, they announced their future. It's different. It's not quite as, yeah, they're doing Civil War. Yeah, they're doing, it wasn't that. But it was still like, we were all on Twitter talking about every single thing. We're talking about it right now. Like, oh, they're doing Blade. We're just like still talking about that now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was something, right? And this year we didn't even have something. And I even told everyone, I'm like, yeah, guys, I'm going to cover Comic-Con, going to get so excited. And it was just an empty weekend. I mean, we got a couple of things, some New Mutants press screening, if it comes out. The Boys clip, that clip was pretty great, I'll admit. But nothing of note. And it has to be one of the most disappointing, just semi-hyped-up weekends. And you could blame what's been happening in the world, sure, but even if that wasn't the case, do we think it would have been any better? I mean, honestly, I pose that to you guys. Do we think Comic-Con would have been better if it were in person this year? Do you think so?
Yeah. Okay. Because here's the thing with Comic-Con, and I think that maybe they shouldn't have really done it online this year. The thing about Comic-Con is people go to see this stuff in person, the exclusivity. Yeah. They go to roam the floor to meet the artists, to meet their favorite comic book authors, to meet, God, I don't know, like Tom Kenny and the cast of SpongeBob on like the floor and buy exclusive merch that you can only buy on the floor. They go and stand in line for hours in these Hall H panels just so that they can see, like physically see the stars of their favorite properties in person. They go to see Kevin Feige give like, you know, an amazing presentation on stage. It's almost like a performance, you know, for them. They go to see stuff like Mahershala Ali getting put out on stage as Blade. That stuff only works in person. You cannot duplicate that virtually. And so I think right off the bat, you're already at a disadvantage. And so now the Comic-Con solely is going to be successful depending upon who is there and the kind of content that you have. And if it's not in person, then, I mean, I imagine that all these studios didn't want to really get involved with it. DC's like, you know what? We're going to do our own thing. Marvel, you know, they're basically in limbo right now and they don't have anything to show. New Mutants was the only one that was like, okay, you could win Comic-Con. And I think they basically did just by default. But the rest of the panels, there was nothing really there. It was all pre-recorded. It wasn't exciting. And so that paired with not being in person and going to see all this stuff exclusively, I think is what made it a giant flop, to be honest.
Yeah, it was a flop. Right. Yeah. And I think there are a few things to it. I think it's everything you just said of part of it, the experience of the showmanship of it all. And that's some of why, you know, why is Kevin Feige, you know, such a legend? Because he is good at like walking out, knowing how to work the room and put all that stuff. And that's the showmanship of it and the shenanigans of who's going to walk out and be released, how they're announced. And there's not really a way to do that live. My wife's work, careful how I say all this, but it's like their national convention for her, the company, was earlier this month. And normally it's, you know, 5,000 people in a room, you just all corporate stuff, but they're trying to have fun with it. And they tried to do that for the live version of it for people stuck at home. And so they're trying to kind of amp up and, you know, it's tough to do that. Tough to do that and kind of come off cheesy. And certainly you're not going to do with these $1 billion franchises. And so I think there's two sides. If you can't meet live, you can't have the showmanship of it. Second one, part of the Comic-Con announcements, it's your marketing plan. How do you do a marketing plan, long-term marketing plan for things that you don't know when they're going to come out? Like you can't even promote something a year in advance because the stuff that's come up supposed to, as one of the things we'll talk about later in this, the stuff that was supposed to come out in December is now coming out next summer.
Yeah.
It's like everything, it's just, everything is shuffling and it like, okay, well, it's probably not a good time for us to announce our long-term plan when we don't know what the industry is going to look like a year from now. We don't even know, like, is AMC going to go under? We don't know. So how do you long-term plan for that? We don't. And so you can't really do the stuff that makes Comic-Con amazing and the bombshells when you have no confidence in your future. And I think that's killed so much of what they were trying to do for it, or what you normally they try to do for the big Hall H panels.
Yeah, I agree.
Me too.
So we had a super chat come in. Sash Young, very sorry for mispronouncing your name. Tom Cruise is one of my favorite actors, and he's shooting MI7 and 8. Would love the franchise to get Quentin Tarantino treatment. Wow. Thoughts? I hate that idea. I would love, here's two things I would love. Tom Cruise in a Quentin Tarantino movie, 100%. Yes. Number two thing I would love, Quentin Tarantino doing a full-on spy movie. I would love that. And we know he loves the genre because he was a big fan of the TV show Alias. And the show Alias is what led to J.J. Abrams. Like, Tom Cruise saw Alias and he went, oh, this is cool. Went to go get the guy behind it, J.J. Abrams. That led to him and Bad Robot kind of being the producing partners for the Mission Impossible movies over the last 15 years. So there's even kind of ties into it to Quentin Tarantino. Quentin Tarantino was actually acted on the show Alias. That's what I was referring to. That's how we know he's a fan of it. Like, he literally acted on the show as a character in it. But I don't want his cooking on this franchise. Yeah. Like, he has such a distinct flavor when he cooks something. And what I love about the Mission Impossible franchise is that it's Tom Cruise's cooking. It's his brand, and they are not the same thing. And I would love to see the two of them collaborate. I would love to see him do spy movie. Hey, 10 years from now, if Tom Cruise stops doing these and he does some sort of comeback for one more spy movie in Tarantino, I'm for that. I do not want a Mission Impossible movie that has – I mean, all of his movies are rated R, right? I mean, they're all
No question. I mean,
right off the bat, like there's all sorts of things like that that I wouldn't want that. Griffin, spy movies are your thing. How badly do you want Quentin Tarantino to direct Mission Impossible 9?
He's just not the right guy for it. I mean, I think everything you said is exactly why he shouldn't do it. I mean, his style doesn't really fit well with this. You know what he would be great for? He'd be great for The Man from U.N.C.L.E. if they wanted to like take all the restraints off of that and whatnot. I mean, look, like Guy Ritchie is basically like a British Tarantino. I mean, they're very different. Like, don't get me wrong, but like, seeing what Guy Ritchie did with that series, it's a period piece. It already feels like primed for like Tarantino if you wanted to tackle that sort of thing. So that's the spy franchise I'd be more interested in seeing him do something with. MI is just not, I don't know if Tarantino is even capable of doing like the caliber stunts that they do on here or directing them. Listen, he's a capable filmmaker, but it's like, it's a different sort of muscle that you have to exercise for that stuff.
Exactly.
And Cruise and McQuarrie are basically on the same wavelength. We have no idea whether Cruise and Tarantino are on the same wavelength. So I don't want to see that, but you know what? You brought up something interesting that I do want to touch on that I want to pose to you guys. So you said Tarantino acted a little bit in Alias, which I had actually forgot about, but you know, if the next film he does is his final film, what are the chances that you think he delves back into acting? I know we've been talking about writing with him for a while, but people forget that he actually is an actor.
Right. I don't know. I think it's an interesting concept, and you know, he did. It seems like he's backed off quite a bit over the last 15 years. But that first 15 years, I mean, his character is one of my favorites in Pulp Fiction. I love that little the body situation. I just love the whole deal. And somebody like, he's the weakest actor in the movie. Okay, sure, but he's also acting against people that are fantastic. Like, I don't think he hurts the movie at all. Like, it's a great sequence. I rewatched the movie last week, and it's like, I just love. Like, do you understand? If my wife comes home and sees a dead body, I'm going to get a divorce.
It's so good. Yeah. And then like from Dusk Till Dawn too.
Right, he's Dusk Till Dawn. Desperado. He's in a ton of this different stuff. We just forget about it because it was all 20 years ago. So I think that'd be fun. How about you? Are we actually haven't heard from you? What do you want Tarantino doing a Mission Impossible movie, and what do you want him to act in? Do you think he could be the next Tony Stark?
Yeah. the acting thing's interesting. I mean, again, not the best actor comparing, but you're playing the comparison game, right? If he's, maybe something smaller scale or putting him up against actors that aren't of that caliber, I think he would do well. As long as he's in the consciousness after he's done directing, we'll have to see. As long as he's in the consciousness, I'd be interested. In terms of the marriage of Tarantino and Star Trek is one that I had to warm up on. I don't see myself warming up on this. I honestly, and I normally don't say this, I want McQuarrie to just stay with that franchise because he did such a great job with the previous two films. And I think he's on for the next two, right? Yes. So I don't mind that whatsoever. Tarantino and Mission Impossible, it doesn't mix. You put it in a blender, you're going to get two completely different. I don't see it. I don't see it. So let's hope that doesn't happen.
Moving along, I don't want to talk on this one too terribly long because we got a ton of stuff to cover. That the Emmy nominations were put out yesterday. Television's a little bit tricky for me because it's so scattershot. And so everybody watches different shows. So I haven't even seen most of the stuff that's been nominated. But one of the big ones that does apply into kind of the content that we do talk about here frequently, The Mandalorian was actually nominated for Best Drama, which would be a big win for Disney Plus. Obviously, it's a big win for Star Wars. To get my quick thoughts on this one, people are asking me, like, do you think it should have been nominated? Do you think these other shows should have been nominated? I haven't seen enough of these shows to know what should have been nominated. I'll just say this. As someone that's as big of a Mandalorian as anybody, it struck me as weird that it was nominated for this. It's not really trying to be prestige television. It's just trying to be really good popcorn. I mean, even the way it's episodic, it did what it was trying to do really well, but it just doesn't seem like it's trying to win these types of awards. So when it was nominated, it seemed like I don't know. It just seems weird to me that it got nominated. Austin, what do you think about the Emmy nominations? Just is kind of broad level.
Well, I'll tell you this. I mean, granted, we've all had, I guess, more cleared up schedules this summer. I've seen more shows than I've ever seen nominated for Emmy. So that's cool. Listen, I am so happy The Mandalorian got nominated. But you look at some of the other shows that weren't nominated. I'm like, Euphoria. Right. I know you're as upset as I am. How do you feel about that, man?
Just put it short. The Mandalorian didn't even campaign really for this. They did not dump a lot of money into it, which is the complete opposite of what you would normally see from a show that is nominated for this.
Right.
So that just means that they went with it, which is bizarre. Look, I am probably the least hot on The Mandalorian on this panel compared to both of you. I enjoyed it. I don't think it was all that great, and it was kind of
how do I kick this guy out?
It left a lot to be desired, but man.
And I totally get that. That's exactly right. Like for me, I have all these ties to nostalgia watching with my son. The fact that we have some Star Wars that actually was good. And even in the ways that it's bad, it's not divisively bad. It's not like, why did you do this to Luke? It's not dividing the fan base. It's just like, this got really episodic. But like there's faults in what they did. There's very obvious faults that everyone that even liked the show, they go, they probably should have done this a little different.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. When you have something just as like confronting and just like poignant and incredibly well acted, stylized, and just with a killer soundtrack and a score like Euphoria, that's like really heavy and mature, but it's like relatable. It's like, how in God's name did that not get nominated for Outstanding Drama Series? Like, it blows my mind. And then I guess like the next one would be like The Morning Show, which I think is a good show, definitely more, Emmy baity, but like, I'm still, my jaw is still on the floor from the fact that Euphoria did not get a best drama series nomination. And listen, The Mandalorian is not the show that should have gotten in there. There are countless other, Westworld should have gotten in there over The Mandalorian. So I don't know. It's just weird to me.
So the weird is the key word, because I don't understand fully what they're going for with the nomination. Because I always think, you know, people are trying to do something, and the reason they put this one in there, because you just watch it and you go, it's a popcorn Star Wars show. That's like a fun Western and Star Wars, cute baby Yoda. But when you have all these shows that are much more complex storytelling inherently, like built into it, Mandalorian, it's intentionally simplistic storytelling. Mm-hmm. It's intentionally going back to the formula of old Westerns. Each episode is a different classic Western told in the world of Star Wars, but straightforward, simple stories at its core. And then you have all of these complex dramas and other shows that have cinematic filmmaking, all the different stuff that Mandalorian also has. It's just, it's odd. It's very odd.
Griffin. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to ask you, do you know about foreign TV shows? Dark, for example, I was kind of shocked. I don't know the rules for
it. I don't know the rules either.
Would that, because I was shocked that, because that's one of the best things I've seen in a long time. Season 2, no, I believe.
I haven't seen based off all the messages I keep receiving from people.
Yeah, that's right. You get messages all the time to watch Dark.
It's like a weekly conversation on here.
Yeah.
Still haven't seen Dark. Still getting messages that I should watch Dark.
Yeah. I don't know. This is a good point, Austin, because I don't know the rules on that, but I would assume that since it's a Netflix thing, that it competes in the same category as the rest of those Netflix shows, in which case, yeah, you can make a really strong argument for that too. Yeah. Really, really weird. I don't know why they went with The Mandalorian. So listen, for technical achievements, absolutely. Sure. Like it's one of the best looking shows ever. And it cleaned up in that department. But I don't know. Maybe that's why it got the outstanding drama, is because it was like, okay, well, it doesn't have the writing or the performances, but if you look from the other side, the technical side, the directing, the effects, the sound, the score, all that stuff, it is really successful. So maybe we'll throw it in there as like the technical choice. I don't know. That's my only rationale for why that should have gotten in there. But even still, man.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
So super chat guy, come in. Guys, both of you love Breaking Bad. Thoughts on Rhea and Bob not scoring any nominations for Better Call Saul? Really sad. So the tricky thing for me always with television is that there's so much of it that it's really tough to have watched all of it. And so I haven't seen Better Call Saul yet. And then I have been seeing most of the other shows that it got beat over it. So as much as I'm always rooting for Bob and want that show to be successful, because I appreciate what they did on Breaking Bad, and I plan to watch Better Call Saul. Like that'll happen probably in the next year. I don't really want to comment on like, oh man, it's really sad this thing that didn't happen, even though I haven't seen the competition to know why it didn't.
Yeah.
It's television is such a different beast because there's so much of it, and it's a lot more niche and targeted as opposed to movies that are a little bit more broad. There's fewer of them and they're a lot shorter.
I'll tell you what, I was kind of shocked. I didn't see everything in that category, but I saw most of the, because there were multiple nominations for multiple shows. Yeah, he's always getting nominated, isn't he? Bob Odenkirk, he's always getting nominated. Giancarlo Esposito got a nomination for supporting. He didn't get one. And I thought he was just as impressive this season as he has been. So yeah, that one, that and a couple of other acting nominations really, really shocked me this year. I don't know what to think about it.
Did and maybe I read this wrong. Did Giancarlo Esposito, did he get one for Better Call Saul, or did he get one for The Mandalorian?
Better Mandalorian.
Better Call Saul? Yeah,
I thought it was for Better Call Saul.
Esposito nominated. What do we got here? If it
was Mandalorian?
That's even more of a head scratcher if it is Mandalorian. It was
Mandalorian Emmy nominee Giancarlo Esposito.
What? That is,
I didn't know that.
How do you? Yeah. Okay. So that's what I thought.
One acting nomination this morning for Disney Plus's Mandalorian belonged to Giancarlo Esposito.
That,
which is once again like
that. That is
forgetting that is, he's in that other show.
That is, you know, that is baffling. That's became a
legend overnight by showing up in season 3 of Breaking Bad. And you're like, who is this guy? This guy's so good. He has such a screen presence at what, like 50 years old, suddenly became this guy that everybody knew who he was. You know, the comment as we section has been watching all this, people are like, hey, who should he play in the MCU? Like, all of that goes back to this role, Gus, on Breaking Bad. No, The Mandalorian. You know, he grabbed the Darksaber.
Yeah, that's
an Emmy for this.
Yeah, that is just... I mean, look, like if you're, he was barely in The Mandalorian. How right. He didn't even give enough of a performance to warrant
standing there. Yeah, there's not a lot of
nomination. Yeah, that's just
the whole
weird.
Thing is weird. So another super chat that came in from Tom is, what about Stranger Things? Are they deserving? I mean, it's like very cool television. I really enjoy it. That's kind of always when it comes to these things. What is your definition of deserving? Even looking at trying to figure out, are we deciding it based off of what the types of things that they look at to nominate things, which case I have no clue what they're looking at. Are you basing it? What is just the best? These are all subjective terms that people interpret wildly differently. That's why I just stay out of the best category. I'm not really into award ceremonies. I'm just not very good at it. Like I've perceived myself as very bad because the way that my brain is naturally wired is to be like, here's my opinion. It's not the right opinion. And when I say best implies more objective. And so I'm just not the right person to decide that. I really enjoy Stranger Things seasons 1 and 3. Is it better than all these other shows that I haven't watched? I don't know. Is something better because it's more serious and not fandom? Not really. Yeah. Is it better because it tackles important themes? That can be an element, but I don't think that having important themes inherently makes something better made. So there's just a lot of things to factor into what you qualify as deserving.
Yeah. I
love prestige stuff and award shows.
Yeah, I do want to correct. So actually, we were both right. He was nominated for Best Guest Star on The Mandalorian and Best Supporting for Better Call Saul. So that's where the discrepancy was. And I looked it up. Yeah,
legend crazy. Right there. Yeah, two nominations.
There we go.
And we're also legends too because we were both correct on this.
There you go. Yeah. So it's like you both spoke at the same time and gave the correct answer. But you gave two different answers. That's wild. In terms of Stranger Things, listen, I think Stranger Things season 3 is probably the best season of that show. They really, really hit it with the emotions. And I think it is deserving of that nomination. Performances are excellent. The story was like, I know some people feel like they retread the same thing a lot, but I don't know. To me, it felt a little bit different in season 3, or different enough to the point where I was like, okay, yeah, we know what's going on with the monster and everything, but that's not where the drama is. The drama is with the characters and their struggle and like coming of age and stuff like that. And so I think Stranger Things is pretty consistently entertaining and has like the writing and the craftsmanship behind it to sort of back up what they're doing. So yeah, I don't know. For me, I think it is deserving, but I can understand why people would take it out and maybe like slide in some other stuff in there. I'll put it this way. I think it's certainly more deserving than The Mandalorian just based on a writing standpoint.
Okay, we had a super chat come in, and then we're going to... Oh, sorry. Did you have something to add on that one?
No. I was just going to say I'm with Griff. I'm a bit biased when it comes to Stranger Things because I love it so much, but I do think in terms of awards caliber, I do think it is maybe deserving for what it got nominated for. So I'm happy.
Yeah. So had a super chat come in. We'll tackle this one, and then we're going to dive into all of the release date stuff from the past week. It was just a landslide of release date information. So he says this, guys, you have grown up loving Star Wars and indie. How would you repackage those original trilogies to today's generation who would find them dated? Wow. I kind of would reject the premise of the question. I have an 8-year-old son, and he's watched the original Star Wars trilogy, and he can sit there and watch it. It's dated in the sense that the technology wasn't quite there, and so you can certainly see some dated special effects. If you raise someone only on CGI, and then you're like, here, let me show you practical effects, then they go, well, this looks crazy and weird. If you don't do that, then that's not the case. These aren't, these are movies that created the current pacing of films. They are a little bit slower than today's blockbusters, but they are dramatically faster than the blockbusters of immediately before when they came out. They ushered in the way that we do blockbusters. They invented the term blockbuster through what Spielberg and Lucas did. So I kind of reject the premise of them. I don't think that you need to repackage them. I think the Indiana Jones movies move at a brisk pace, have humor to them. And because they're period piece films, they're intentionally designed in a way that the effects, even though they are dated, don't really come off dated. So I would more reject the premise, and I don't think that they're movies that you need to repackage them to win people over. Griffin, you believe, as a someone younger than me, believe that movies before 1990 all suck. So
yes, they do.
Do you have anything to repackage them or anything like that?
How would you repackage original trilogy? I don't know. That's such like a weird question. Cause I agree with you. Why do you need to repackage them? Can't you just like watch them and enjoy them as is now? I mean, I understand like there's so many different ways to interpret that. Cause like, I understand like restoring them for like a 4K right. Blu-ray release. That's totally fine. But like, why would I don't know. Why would you change stuff about them? Like going to Star Wars, people don't like the current versions of that original trilogy because they changed what was already great about the originals and added in just this floofy, stupid nonsense in some cases kind of makes the films worse, especially Return of the Jedi. Yeah, the singing.
I think even what's the best thing you can do to repackage them? Man, I almost feel like saying like The Force Awakens, releasing that movie, because that's the gateway for a new generation. And go, oh, do you like this? And you get used to it and it's true to the originals. And, you know, the criticism is that it's paying too much homage. It's taking too much from A New Hope. Yeah. But that's the thing, that it creates a bridge of a movie that's made it current special effects. You get into it, you like the world. And if you enjoy that, it's not like a hard pill to swallow to go back and watch A New Hope.
Exactly. I mean, it's the great thing about, like, you know, when there's been a long period of time since we've seen, a film in this franchise, is exactly what you said. It gives them an opportunity to re-release this stuff either theatrically or on physical media, maybe do a restoration of some sort, generate hype, get people to rediscover these films before they go see the new one, or maybe after they've seen the new one. Hey, guys, we've got like three or four or whatever, however many of these movies over here that are like beloved classic movies. So if you love this, it's in the same franchise. Check these out. It's literally like what we do on YouTube. Like, it's just like, if you want if you like this video, you want to see more, check out this playlist over here. Like, that's
exactly.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of like, you know, if they make this James Mangold Indiana Jones movie and it's a Logan-esque deconstruction of Indiana Jones, even the simple fact that he's an old man, even if it's a great movie, it's not a great bridge to what those films were. Even some of the reason that, you know, King of the Crystal Skull isn't a great bridge to those previous ones, there's a lot more green screen CGI that kind of broke from some of the formula.
Yeah.
Whereas if they'd done all that practically, it would have fit better. And that's even some of the reason it just feels weird in office, that stuff that they did, things they moved away from the aesthetic that they used for the original trilogy. So I don't think that that's the right direction to go or the way to think about it either. All right. So last week, overshadowing actually any Comic-Con announcement from the first day of Comic-Con, was just a series of announcements of delays: A Quiet Place 2, Top Gun Maverick, and a ton of other movies were pushed back. Now, we don't need to go through, break all of this down or anything like that, but tons of movies got delayed, and then Tenet got a new release date with a new release strategy, which is this staggered release of international in certain markets at the end of August, and then in some cities in the United States after Labor Day weekend or something like that. So tons of announcement on this stuff. It feels like we're saying the same thing every single week. Like, well, yeah, duh, they're delaying stuff. They don't know what's going to happen. Theaters probably aren't really going to open. I don't know if this Tenet thing's going to happen. It's like a weird experiment. We'll see what happens. So I don't even have much to say on it. People are like, what do you think about this? What they're doing with Tenet? I don't know. I'm going to have to see what happens. I don't trust that it's going to happen. I feel entirely like, we're going to have another spike 3 weeks from now. Like, things are going to die down and it's going to go back up. If they open the theaters, who knows what's, I have no clue. Cause all of this is a big surprise. Austin, any surprises that movies got delayed in the year 2020? And do you think that Tenet will hit its staggered release?
Shocked, man. Shocked, baffled, just utterly couldn't believe it. Sadness, pain, devastation. No, we expected this. It's going to keep happening. You know, it's something that I think we have to accept at this point. I mean, maybe the Tenet release date sticks, but I've said that what, 3 times now, and it's not happened. I don't see 2020 going as planned. Even as of now, things will continue to shift. But I will say, I mean, there is just like a glimmer of hope with, and I know we're going to talk about this a bit later with, you know, the deal being worked out between AMC and Universal and the fact that Nolan is so adamant about doing this because he wants to get back to that theatrical experience. So on the outside, it's sad, but if we look into it a bit more, maybe there's that just tiny glimmer of hope. We'll just have to wait and see.
Griffin, were you shocked that these were delayed?
Yes, I shocked to my core. I can't believe it. And I think here's the thing. You have to look at Paramount specifically. This isn't just like an instance of like, oh, movies are getting delayed left and right because of the pandemic we're in. No. Paramount cannot really afford to take a hit there with all the money they've dumped into Quiet Place, with all the money they dumped into, you know, Top Gun and everything. Like, those are two movies that they're putting all their chips in on there because they know that they're guaranteed money makers, and they as a studio cannot afford to lose any of that money. So they're going to push it to next year. Hopefully things will be better for them, but you know, I understand that because I think they took a loss on a few films that they recently released. So to me, it makes sense. You know, if they were in a better position financially, I could see them maybe trying to release A Quiet Place in September. Again, I think a lot of this kind of falls on like what happens with Tenet and then who's going to kind of like follow suit after. Are other studios going to adopt a similar mentality and take the risk just to see what happens? So yeah, in this instance, no, not surprised, but I am curious to see what other studios do.
And the big one that dropped yesterday, this shocked me to my core. Snake Eyes, the G.I. Joe movie.
Listen, dude.
It was supposed to come out in October. That one was delayed. I was like, what? Even Snake Eyes, that movie that they have not released a frame from or a trailer or made any announcements about, that's not actually going to come out 2 months from now? What?
Well, it's also another Paramount movie, if I'm not mistaken. So they really are just like, guys, we've given our best in 2020. We can't afford to lose money. So Snake Eyes, even you are going to have to move to an undetermined date in 2021.
The Snake Eyes news shocked me because I didn't know the movie existed. I had no clues. They're like, hey, this movie.
I feel like
that news came out 5 years ago. That's what it feels like, 5 years ago. Yeah. And I'm like, happened. No, it's not. It's moved. So it's just like so many emotions, guys. I was baffled.
When I tweeted about it, so many people were like, I didn't even know this was a thing. I hadn't even heard about this. And then there was always like, you know, tons of people saying, I haven't heard about it. And then there's always that one guy that's like, I remembered that this was coming out. I'm really disappointed. Like, what? You're the one?
I think when I figured out that Snake Eyes was actually a movie and it was actually happening was when they created the Twitter account for it and they released the logo. And I was like, excuse me, what? This is actually a thing? Like, oh, good Lord. Anyways, yeah.
Along these same lines, speaking of movie theaters, my local theater actually opens back up on Friday. And I looked at the lineup. It was literally like 8 of them are my top 10 and then the next two are my wife's top 10. I mean, it's Raiders of the Lost Ark, it's Jaws, it's Harry Potter, Back to the Future, Jurassic Park. I mean, legitimately, just a rundown. And then all of it says like classics return, and then The Hunt. Classics return.
and then The Hunt. yeah.
Bloodshot. Classics return.
Man.
So I'm pretty excited to go to the movies and get a bad case of coronavirus this Friday.
Listen. That one. You're as long as you are making that decision with all the knowledge that you know, Sean, then I think that that's okay. You've calculated the risks. You know that, listen, if I get this, it'll destroy our whole family. But you know what? Those classics are worth the risk. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm sorry. Bloodshot is worth the risk.
I want to take Bloodshot. But that's even the thing about, you know, the theater being open and everything like that and playing movies like that. Back to the question before, like I see that and go like, okay, if it's safe to go, man, that would be so cool to take my son to see Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah. Like however long this sticks around, whenever it's like, take my son to see Raiders of the Lost Ark. I don't think, I don't want to take him to see that boring old slow paced movie with that unlikable lead character. Like, no, you're like, this is a cool movie. It's still like, and how do you get people to the next generation love it? See it on the big screen. That is speaking of the big screen, we reported back was it April or early May? Universal announced that they were going to start continuing to do this movies drop on digital when they're in theaters, which was tactically not the wisest thing to do because there's long running negotiations, both official and unofficial, between movie studios and theaters to where they really negotiate back and forth to what the time frame is before studios can put movies on digital. So making that statement ill-advised, and then AMC is like, all right, well, we're not going to put Universal movies on our screens then, which is, you know, AMC doesn't have a lot of leverage to say that when they're this close from shutting. There are doors already shut, but they're this close to not being in business anymore because they have such financial troubles. As of yesterday, they cut a deal. They've worked out their differences. Mom and dad are getting back together. And I believe they said it was 17 days after a movie releases in theaters, Universal can put it on digital. So 17 days seems like a random number until you go. That's 2 weeks and 3 weekends. So weekends are the big things for movies. And so they say, all right, we want 3 weekends, 2 weeks. That's where that number comes from. What do I think about it? I mean, I think Corona turned the whole world upside down. That everything, all bets are off. Everyone's just trying to figure out what's the best way to survive. How do we keep making money? How do we prepare for the fact that things like this can happen in the future? So that's the way I perceive of all of this. They're all cutting deals. They're all trying to find out what's best for them.
Yeah.
Austin, what do you make of this?
Yeah, well, everything's
different. Are you different. Team AMC or Team Universal? Which corporate overlord do you serve?
Well, considering I don't actually have an AMC near me, I saw this news and I go, oh, that's daggone it. So it's like, I got to drive like an hour if it's only at AMC theaters. But no, I do like the idea that the studios are trying to, one, put aside their differences, which is nice, but also trying to compromise. I mean, that's the world that we're living in right now, right? It's all of these. Look at sports. I mean, I've been really heavy into football and the NFL over the last couple of weeks. And, you know, after what happened with baseball last week, it's now what do we do? I mean, we should have expected all of these cases to go, but what do we do? Right. The NBA is in a bubble, like the entire world is having to compromise. So we should expect things like this to continue within the industry with companies and theater chains and whatnot. But it is just a crazy world we're living in. And at this point, we have to buckle up and see what else happens.
So, all right, real quick, our final subject of the day, just a moment. We're going to have Austin give us a rundown of the best of Netflix originals during the first half of the year. Because I don't know, because I only watch like things that star familiar faces. He actually knows stuff about that. So I brought him on to give us his take. So be sure to tell us down below in the comments, in the chat, what to you have been the best Netflix originals thus far this year. We did have a super chat come in real quick. So we'll tackle this one while you guys post your favorite Netflix originals. And while Austin thinks up a mind blowing list of recommendations, he says, Shawshank says, guys, speaking of No Time to Die getting delayed, what would be all of your picks for the most underrated Bond film? License to Kill. Griffin, you're the expert. What's your pick?
I mean, either of the Dalton films for sure, or Honor Majesty Secret Service with George Lazenby. But I'll actually go with Quantum of Solace, because I think people just like dog on that movie for all the wrong reasons. It's like, and I say this every time I bring it up, but it's an amazing, excellent follow up to Casino Royale that, yeah, it doesn't hit the same highs, but like it beautifully concludes Bond's arc throughout the course of those two films. So like, you know, take out all the you know, surface level or surface level superficial issues with the movie. It's really, really solid.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with Sean, License to Kill. But Griffin, I'm not a fan of that one. So it may, I've seen it once, so it may require a bit of a rewatch because it's been a while. But you're kind of making me want to go back and revisit that before the new one. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yes. So, like, you know, for me, I got into Bond right around GoldenEye. So that's when I started to be kind of middle school age, was, and got started, you know, watching TBS, TNT. My parents weren't big Bond fans or anything like that, so I kind of discovered it on my own. And then, so what were the ones that came out right before that? Was Dalton. And then, you know, it was just, he was out. And it was like a really, I like that take on the character, like really like Dalton. And then they have a little bit more edge to them. And so I've always enjoyed the Dalton films, and there's only two of them. And so because there's only two of them, he's not as much in some of the conversations as these other long running Bonds. And then, you know, License to Kill, you know, a little like it's violent. Benicio del Toro gets a wonderful closing scene in that movie. It's pretty vicious.
Yeah, yeah.
People explode in this movie, get chopped up in meat grinders. Yeah, that's the one to me that's just my obvious immediate pick on that one. All right, moving right along, I'm going to send this one right over to you, Austin, as the resident Netflix originals expert. That's kind of, if you guys don't know, if you're kind of being introduced to Mr. Burke, kind of one of the things he does great on his channel is dives into all these Netflix original shows, movies, and that's a lot of where his expertise is, and he covers it a lot more extensively than I have, and that's why he's perfect to come on here and chime in on what things should I potentially check out. I checked out Desperados earlier this month. Is that on your list, dear, of some of the best originals?
It's on a list. Not the good one, that's for sure.
Yeah, so my wife and I were both actually, this might sound crazy, we were both really excited about this movie because it was Dahlia from Aladdin. And she was like this standout. It's like she's the girl in it that's this new character playing off of Will Smith, you know, the most charismatic guy in the last 30 years, and holding her own. And she was funny. And so we saw, oh, she's going to star in a movie. We're like, this will be great. No. There's one moment in it, in this scene with a dolphin. Everybody that's seen the movie goes, I didn't like the movie. And then the dolphin scene happened and I'm out. My wife, who was clearly not enjoying the movie, she literally stood up. She goes, I'm out. I'm done with this movie. And it only got worse from there.
Yeah, it was so bad. That's not on the list for sure.
The wrong Missy is, right? The wrong Missy is on the list. Like, let's be real here. Yeah.
You guys are reminding me. It's,
which,
you know,
one is worse.
Honestly, I think I gave them, I may have given them the exact same score, which is in the 2 range. So it's not good out of 10, not out of 3.
Which one is more disappointing? The one that, the one that David Spade is still like, oh man, this guy, they gave him a movie again, and it's this. Yeah. Or the girl gets it from Aladdin, gets a shot. And then, like, I saw even some, you know, retweets for some people. I don't remember which country she's from, but it's like, you know, representation that she, like, that, like, really cool things.
Yeah.
And then they give her this just garbage movie with a whale or dolphin penis.
I like the other actors in there as well. You have the girl from Pitch Perfect. You've got guy. Yeah. Lamorne. I think his name's Lamorne Morris or whatever. He was great. And it's just like they botched that premise, completely botched it. Unfunny. And those are the worst movies. I do have a couple of movies that I want to share. First, I do want to share some of the season twos and threes, the sequel seasons. We've already talked a bit about Dark, season three, one of the coolest sci-fi finales I've ever seen. There's a show called On My Block, which is a coming of age show. And we got,
I think we talked about that last week. I think Kristen talked about that.
It's so good. It's so good. Maybe the wrap up season, but I don't think so. That season, season three of that, I believe three was fantastic. There are plenty of sequel seasons that we could talk about, including Umbrella Academy, which is not out yet, but I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed season two of that. I do want to talk about, though, a documentary just super quick that I know a lot of you all have seen. It's on, it came off of ESPN, now on Netflix. It is a Netflix original. There you go. It is called The Last Dance. I am a massive Michael Jordan fan. I think he's the greatest player of all time. And it was cool to see go in his head, right, and see how he plays the game. But not only how he plays the game, but how he associates himself to being the ultimate winner, right? And that winner's mentality, sometimes good, sometimes bad. One of my favorite things that I've seen on Netflix all year. I do have some original shows, though, that maybe not a lot of people have seen. We'll talk about two. I have a little bit of a longer list, but we'll keep it brief because I like to talk. One called Never Have I Ever. Mindy Kaling was heavily involved in this, and it's described as the complicated life of a modern day first generation Indian American teenage girl. And it's actually based on Kaling's childhood. I expected, it's 10 episodes, 30 minute episodes. I expected nothing from the show, nothing, because we've seen this 1,000 times on Netflix. It was a great time, a great coming of age story. You're getting a different perspective on how someone like her lives her life. And she's kind of narrating us through so many cute and funny gags. I mean, it's just a show that I would recommend to anyone who loves coming of age. Sort of the opposite end of the spectrum, something a lot more serious. And this had a couple of nominations for the Emmys. It's called Unorthodox. I don't know if either one of you have had the chance to see that. Shira Haas was nominated. And this is the story of an ultra-Orthodox Jewish woman who flees her arranged marriage and finds a new life, right? Only four episodes, the perfect binge. It is some of the most emotional television I've seen in quite some time. So good. You're going to get all that Emmy recognition once you see the show. And I saw a couple of things in the chat. BoJack Horseman, absolutely a couple of shows that I'll miss out on. Have you guys had the chance to see any of those so far? No. Last Dance? No. John, are you a Michael Jordan fan?
Sure. I mean, like, you know, I'm 90s. So was it 1992 Dream Team? You know, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Patrick Ewing. I mean, all of those guys, that's my childhood. I'm not a big sports guy, but, you know, of course, tracked all that stuff. And so then, you know, Michael Jordan was the king of this incredible era. Everybody loved it. I just haven't seen it. Like, that's where a lot of times people are like, oh, you would love this. It's like, you're probably right. The problem is it, especially right now, my kids are here home all day. We only really have one place where we watch TV in our house, and they're trying to be entertained by things, and it's just tough. It's just really tough to be able to watch everything I'm interested in watching and everything I need to watch for the channel. There's just too many. That's the factor. Actually, I had a question come in. Dizziel, very sorry to pronounce your name. At least review Dark for your international audience. I see about half the Indian, half the people in your chat are Indian. Every nation except US is watching it, trending number one in India. Like, and none of that's lost on me at all. Like, I totally get that. Like, I'm, and it's not that I'm not interested. It's none of those things. Like, I've spent the last few weeks trying to watch through the IMDb top 15 for a video I've wanted to do for a while. But it took me 3 weeks just to do prep for this one deal. People are asking me, you should watch Avatar Last Airbender. There's just a lot of things out there that make it really tough. So whether it's Last Dance, whether it's Dark, it's just tough to watch all the things I need to watch while I can't watch them during the day because my kids are here and there's only so much I can watch at night. With that, like, wife, come and watch this German science show. Maybe she'd be really into it.
She
really wants to watch Deep Blue Sea 3 tonight.
Oh man, Deep Blue Sea. I just rewatched the first one yesterday and oh boy. Wow. Wow. I can't say that it's a good movie, but it is a movie with Thomas Jane.
Griff, did you get a chance to see any of the, whether it's Last Dance or Dark Season 3, any of those shows?
I don't think I watched the most recent season of Dark. I've seen the first two seasons. Okay. Obviously the show's great, so I recommend it to everyone. I have not seen The Last Dance. I don't know. I mean, I was interested in it for sure. And just sort of like, I had heard all these great things about it, and it's probably one of the best things ESPN's produced, I assume. Yeah, so, no, that's definitely on my list for stuff I want to watch. Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing too, is that there are just so many things that, and I know each of us have our own list of things that we have to get to. Like some of these shows that I talked about, Unorthodox, I never would have watched that if I didn't have to review it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm glad I was introduced. A lot of these shows end up being bad, and I'm like, I wasted 10 hours of my life. But something like that, I'm really happy that I got the chance to watch. Now, it just a couple of movies, just in case, because I know we're more movie people here, recommendations. I know you guys have probably seen The Five Bloods. Okay.
Yeah, I have.
That's the clear, you know, recommendation for me. I was a big fan of The Platform. I like that movie a lot. I know it's a bit.
I saw that at Fantastic Fest last year. So I actually saw it in a theater. With a rowdy audience too. So I saw it a long time ago.
I would love to see that in a theater. See what it changes with the experience. Old Guard. I'm sure we know the Old Guard. A couple of movies that not a lot of people have heard of. A film called Tiger Tail, directed by Alan Yang. I was a huge fan of this movie. It's about a guy who's kind of reflecting on his life. It's telling the story in an interesting way. And his youth, he went from Taiwan to America and changed cultures completely. I thought it was a beautiful movie. And then the other film is, it's called The Half of It. Now, you think of these Netflix love stories, you think of The Kissing Booth, and I like To All the Boys.
I think about Kissing Booth 3. I'm very excited. They're going to close out this trilogy next year. How did we not cover that earlier?
How did we not do that?
It's already been shot.
I mean, we've been talking about a disappointing 2020. This has to be the best news we've received. I was tickled pink we got this news. Seriously, I almost threw my phone across. But yeah, this one's actually, it's called The Half of It. It's a very good coming of age story. And it's about a really shy girl who kind of falls for a certain person. I don't want to give a lot away, but associated with her, and she's having difficulties coming out about it. And her best friend, there's this other interesting relationship. So you're like, oh, Austin, it's a love triangle. It's a very well directed love triangle. And when you get a movie like that, it's worth talking about. So The Half of It, if you're another coming of age recommendation from me, if you're a fan, I definitely say that over The Kissing Booth and the second one, which is bad.
All right. So we got to close out the audio version of this real quick. I was told that you really liked The Babysitter's Club.
Yes. How did I not talk about that, Sean?
I don't know. It's apparently like this thing that comes up on the podcast all the time now. So I was shocked that you didn't bring it up. I was told specifically that you liked it. Oh.
Kristen and Rachel, did they talk about it?
The Kissing Booth, the Babysitter's Club has been a big, big hot topic of discussion on this podcast recently.
Yes. Who would have thought?
Kind of insane.
Well, I think it's just
that you expect Tenet, James Bond, anything Marvel, anything DC, and The Babysitter's Club now.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's just the shock factor. It's like, I don't go into The Babysitter's Club. I'm like, here we go. It's another. Man, I'm like, I'm with those girls. I'd let them babysit my kids. Like, I loved the story. And I walked away like, give me a season two. And we're getting one. So, yeah, that's another great recommendation.
All right, we got to close out the audio version here. We'll still take some questions on the live chat. So if you want to throw in some super chats, we've got a few lined up already, as well as any questions. We'll stick on for a little bit until my battery dies. Austin, where can we find you on the internet?
Yeah. Austin Burke on YouTube, on Letterboxd. I like to log everything that I watch, and at the Burkinator on the Twitters and the Instagrams. Thank you, Sean, for having me on here, man. It was
congratulations on being accepted onto Rotten Tomatoes. Very cool. Very cool.
Thank you so much. It was awesome. But honestly, I mean, you know, watching videos, you and Griff, both of you all the time, like just kind of gives me the motivation and pushes me to want to keep doing more and more. So I appreciate you too. And I can't wait to go binge more Netflix stuff after this.
Griffin, where can we find you on the internet?
Yeah, you can head on over to the FilmSpeak channel for all the stuff I have going on over there, reviews, live shows, all that good stuff. And then you can follow me on Twitter at Griff Schiller.
Very cool. That'll do it for the audio version of the podcast. You can find the original live stream of these. They're almost always Wednesdays at 11 a.m. Central Time if you want to join in on the chat. But if you also want to check this out at a later time, it is available on almost all the podcasting sites. The link is down below in the description. Thank you so much for watching or listening, and keep talking movies way too much.